Welcome to Still Scared Talking Children's Horror, a podcast about creepy, spooky, and disturbing children's books, films, and TV. I'm Ren Wednesday, my co-host is Adam Wybrey, and today we're talking about the 2019 series of The Demon Headmaster. A full transcript of this episode will be available, so check the show notes for that. Enjoy! Hi, Adam.
Hello.
Hi. This is our first time recording in the new human era. So excuse us if we are a little bewildered.
I mean, theoretically, it shouldn't make any difference to our recording since we never record in the same room. But...
Well, no, that's true. We've actually been practicing social distancing for some time.
Yeah, but, you know, if you will allow us or accept any mistakes we make is wholly due to Corona, then that would be great. Please do that.
We are recording on Zoom, though. So
That's true, which gives this whole thing a very kind of managerial style feel, which is appropriate for the book that we're looking at.
It's very efficient. So we're here. We're talking about the 2019 series, reboot, sequel, something of The Demon Headmaster.
So the book here, which is based on The Demon Headmaster Total Control, is a reboot. So the tagline at the top of my copy says, "He's back in a brand new adventure," which makes The Demon Headmaster seem like a kind of...
Like a big blue dog or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the book is quite different to the programme, as we will discuss.
I haven't read the book, but I will take your word for it.
The main difference being that, as you say, this new series is kind of at once both a reboot and a sequel.
We should probably say that we're going to full spoiler this from the beginning, and there are some fairly significant spoilers. So if you want to watch it, like, do that first.
I would say it's worth a watch.
It is actually, yeah. It was better than I thought it would be. It's sort of, you think this is going to be a reboot of the series, updated for the 2010s with new characters, and it is, but as it goes on, it turns out it's actually a sequel to the 1996 series and ends up tying that series in sort of surprising and quite delightful ways for adults like us who grew up with that series.
And I think manages to do it so that it's interwoven into the narrative and it has this dual appeal and this dual address, but it's not doing that thing you get in cynical kids' animations like Shrek and Shrek 2 and Shrek 3 and Christmas Shrek and Halloween Shrek, when you've got the kind of cutesy stuff for the kids and then the innuendo for the adults. Mm-hmm. I feel that this isn't talking down to kids, it's certainly watchable from an adult perspective as well.
Yeah. I'll give a brief summary of it. We're not going to go into all the details of the plot, as it is 10 half-hour episodes, and there's a fair bit of meandering that we don't really need to cover all the ins and outs of.
Yeah, I was going to be charitable and say labyrinthine.
Yes, yes. So it's kind of a very similar premise to the original series or the first book, but the details are different. It's a failing school, Hazelbrook Academy. It gets a new headmaster, and suddenly the students become models of excellence and obedience. He, of course, is achieving this through hypnotism, and it's up to a group of plucky students to overthrow him as the stakes keep escalating and his ambitions of control grow to encompass the whole country. This time, our cast of characters are Tyler and Lizzie Warren, who are siblings, played by Ellie Botterill and Jordan Cremont. They're our central protagonists. Their mother is ill, and they've been away to the US to try and help her find a cure. And when they return to Hazelbrook in the first episode, everything's changed. Ethan Prendergast slash Adebayo, played by Dejon Campbell, is Hazelbrook's football star. Although, as we find out, before the Demon Headmaster's intervention, he was keen on coding, not sports. He has an ongoing storyline about discovering the truth about his parents' recent death, the knowledge of which has been suppressed by the headmaster. Angelica Maron, played by Laurie Stott, is the deputy head's daughter and is introduced as the perfect mini-capitalist entrepreneur selling overpriced kale and cabbage smoothies from her Angelic Eats stand in the school. And it's a big surprise when in episode 4 she's prompted to remember her activist past and suddenly starts to spearhead the revolution.
Yeah, in Extinction Rebellion, which is nice.
Oh, was it?
Well, the badge that her mother has is an Extinction Rebellion badge with a line through it. quite literally.
Okay.
So whether that's genuinely thematic or just quite lazy art direction, I don't know.
There you go. And finally, Blake Vinny, played by Jordan Rankin, who's in my opinion the most interesting character, and I'm not just saying that because he's Glaswegian, but incidentally, I do really love hearing a Glaswegian accent on TV. It made me happy. He starts out as the bully threatening Tyler, and then has a really interesting story throughout the series as he's kind of subject to the most intense psychological torture by the headmaster, starting off as head welcomer, which is kind of equivalent to the prefects in the original series, and then demoted to janitor before joining the resistance.
And did you think that orange jumpsuit he ends up wearing as a janitor looked a lot like an American prisoner?
It did, yeah. Yeah, that was very much the vibe to it. I think the actor does a really compelling job of portraying this kind of suppressed rage under Blake's hypnotized veneer.
Yeah, and sort of painful cognitive dissonance, like there are times where it really looks like his brain is kind of breaking, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought we could start by talking about the differences between how the hypnotism works in this series but in the original.
Sure. Well, it's still the eyes, right? He doesn't have like a spinning hypnotic belly button.
No, that's true. That hasn't been updated for the 21st century. It's a different headmaster. We've said this before. Right? It's a different headmaster, but with a similar demeanour.
Slightly less kind of gaunt and Victorian. Like,
yeah, he doesn't wear a cape.
Yeah, and he doesn't look like John Major.
Yes.
He's a bit more chiselled, but it is very much meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Mm-hmm. So in the original series, there was a core group of protagonists who called themselves Splat, who were immune to the hypnotism, while the rest of the school were in complete thrall to the headmaster. But in this series, it seems like no one is immune, but there's a greater emphasis on the fact that the hypnotism wears off and has to be sort of regularly reapplied, like sun cream.
Oh, to quote Zizek, you know, we're eating from the trash can of ideology all the time. And, you know, none of us are immune. And when you think you're the most immune, that's when you're at the most susceptible.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting because it means that the sort of core characters kind of fade in and out of awareness of what's happening to them.
Yeah, and in and out of solidarity, right? It makes for a more kind of alienating and pretty disturbing experience at times because they can't ever wholly trust one another.
Yeah.
And there are times where they do awful things to each other under hypnotism. Like, you know, in the original, it's very much this sense of the plucky kids banding together. And actually, you do get some of that in the book, whereas I found in the series that, yeah, everyone seemed far more atomised.
Mm-hmm. I think particularly with Angelica and Blake, they sort of end up kind of switching between sort of two distinct personalities kind of across the series. And you're never quite sure which one is going to be present for the kind of hypnotized self or their conscious self.
Although the demon headmaster in this series utilizes technology sometimes to hypnotize people in a similar way to in the original. So obviously you have the octopus hypnosis in the second season of the original Demon Headmaster, and on this one, you know, there's a phone apps for the parents.
Yeah. All the parents are given a tablet that tops up the hypnotism to keep the kids in line when they're not in school. Yes, quite a Black Mirror sort of scenario, really.
Yeah. I mean, I really like this as a critique because it does capture the way that institutions and companies have kind of cottoned on to this. Oh, we're doing something that's good for you and nice and charitable. Well, you know, actually taking back rather more than they're giving. Like, it kind of reminds me of Mark Fisher's critiques of, like, mindfulness culture. And just a wellness culture in corporate settings, and how, you know, if, say, you're unhappy at work and you might have genuine, good, concrete reasons to be unhappy at work. You know, you might have an open plan office and your chairs aren't very ergonomically designed to give you backache. So you get a wellness check through on your email and you say, oh, actually, I'm not doing so well. And then, you know, you get an email from HR saying, oh, we're really concerned about how well you're doing, so we're going to put you on a mindfulness course in your lunch breaks. You know, no, you're not going to get paid for doing that course, and yes, you are going to have to do it in your lunch break time, but this is for your own good, and it's to show how much we care about you. It kind of reminded me of that in a way. This way that I think Gillian Cross is clearly kind of interested in the way that kind of schools have become more corporatist.
Mm-hmm.
Like this academisation of schools, right? And there's a good interview with her that I'll link to, or I'll send to you to link to in the show notes about this. And her kind of scepticism towards the way that schools are becoming more privatised and sort of bringing in outside businesses into schools, etc.
Yes, and Angelica and her cake and coffee stall definitely get the brunt of this this ire.
She Gillian Cross seems to really dislike pretentious pop-up coffee places. I mean, I'm a sucker because when I was reading it, there's a bit about sort of ginger hot chocolate, and I was like, oh. Sounds rather nice. Oh, sprinkles and, you know, on top. And then one of the kids drinks it. It's like, it's disgusting.
I was, this is a tangent. I was floored I was shocked and stunned when she was selling cupcakes at like a the school assembly thing, and she had a portable card reader to sell cupcakes to the parents. My God, she is a villain. Anyway, what was it?
It's like the moment where you threw something in rage at the television. Yeah.
A child with a card reader. Truly, it's gone too far. Hypnotism. Another new aspect of the hypnotism is the idea that the headmaster has sort of hypnotized each student into taking up a different speciality within the school. Usually quite at odds with whatever they were interested in before. For example, Lizzie becomes the school's...
I was going to say macrame.
Bakuwan?
Yeah, I almost was going to say macrame. But sadly, it's not.
Bakuwan expert, I think.
It's a martial arts, right?
A form of Chinese martial art, yeah. And Tyler becomes a robotics specialist. I was wondering if you thought that there was a sort of subtext of kind of racial class profiling in the specialisms that the kids are given.
I did until the Chinese martial arts was introduced, and then I wasn't so sure.
Because
the idea is Ethan, who's one of the only... black kids in our central cast, right, has been good at computing, and then he's sort of been coercively switched onto sports, and then Lizzie's slightly kind of socially awkward, geeky brother, who actually really likes magic, is being made an expert in computers and robotics, and actually doesn't really like computers.
Yeah. So, and Lizzie's friend Sophie, who's East Asian, is made an expert on science after previously having been into art.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. I guess the white boy Silicon Valley type. I mean, I think it is probably there. I was a bit thrown by the martial arts because of the fact that that's also not in the book. So in the book, Lizzie's the one who has to learn the Shakespeare sonnets. Which is given to another minor student. In the programme.
I mean, I think it's not very prominent, but I think there's a shade of that of. The thing that's definitely the same about the hypnotism is the way that sort of stock phrases are placed in people's heads so that when they try and tell anyone about the headmaster, all they can do is repeat that he's inspirational, he's really turned the school around. In contrast to the original series, the headmaster is a marvellous man and this is the best school I've ever been to.
And it's interesting because superficially he has, right? So it's a bit like a sort of Clockwork Orange type argument. Mm-hmm. That, you know, certainly the kids are much more better behaved, for instance. That, you know, we would say, for instance, you know, Blake used to be a terrible bully and now he's not bullying anyone. You know, this we would normally see this as, I guess, a good thing, right? But... you know, they have no free will in this situation. I think there's also this sort of sense that, and you get this more clearly in the book, the idea that they're not really learning. And this strikes me as a kind of critique of some Michael Gove's education reforms, where this is a return to more rote learning and this sort of devaluation of the humanities and learning critical thinking skills.
He was the Conservative Party education secretary. Yeah, and I think that was definitely a theme in the original book and series as well, because you had the kids standing around in circles at lunchtime, like chanting their times tables and the kings and queens of England and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think that's definitely a preoccupation. It doesn't come across so much in the series.
No, I'd agree with that.
Although the speed at which they become adept at their new skills definitely shows that they haven't actually learned it themselves.
It's like The Matrix.
It is like The Matrix. That's what I was thinking of. Yes, that's what it always makes me think of. So he's definitely learned some new tricks in his 20-year sabbatical from demon headmastering.
Well, you say he, but of course, it's not necessarily the same demon headmaster.
The entity that creates demon headmasters has learned some new tricks?
Yeah, because we get the impression by the end of the series, you might disagree with me, that they're a kind of, I don't know, race of creatures, maybe, like an alien race, or possibly manufactured...
Yeah.
By, yeah.
Yeah.
Like Pokemon, but Demon Headmasters. Demon Headmaster, Demon Headmaster. Demon Headmaster. Demon Headmaster uses hypnotism.
So, we talked a bit about the technology. There's definitely a large expanded role of the technology in this series, with tablets and drones and electronic wristbands helping enforce the Demon Headmaster's authority.
Yeah, it's always technology being used to control people, even while it's being presented as fun or something that might be enjoyed.
Yeah.
Or for your own good, right? I mean, that's definitely the critique of the drones.
Yes, they do. The drones do routine checks on the kids to make sure they're doing their homework. And by episode four, kind of zooming about all over the school, enforcing the rules, including. I particularly enjoyed hoving into view, beeping, warning, unsustainable market practice, when Angelica starts giving away food and drink for free.
Did it remind you of your food not bomb days at uni?
Yeah. What do you think of the political... social justice themes of the show?
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were done pretty convincingly. I mean, the XR style flashbacks are a little bit cringy at times, but you kind of need them to be a bit obvious so you can get the idea across quickly and efficiently. I thought, as a critique of surveillance culture, it was pretty dead on. I mean, it's interesting because to me, it was making its, if we decide to read the new Demon Headmaster as a political text, which, right, you don't have to, you can, it seemed to me to be coming often from a more kind of, like, libertarian position than I kind of left wing. Well, there's not much. It's interesting because while there's this critique of like the academisation and these kids being forced to specialise, there's not really the sense, which you do get to a degree in the original, that, you know, the class all needs to sort of come together in collective revolt against the Demon Headmaster. You know, there isn't really much sense of solidarity in this. And a lot of the critique seemed to be focused on the idea that the Demon Headmaster is taking away their individual free will and their individual rights to, say, you know, be disruptive or even be a bully, right? Like, a lot of the critiques seem to be around, say, individual liberty, which, you know, I'm not saying, oh, I disagree, get rid of all individual liberty. but those concerns strike me as quite kind of libertarian concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think?
I thought there was some interesting stuff around Blake and around Lizzie's mum. With Blake, his speciality is being a janitor. It's not really a speciality, but I mean, yeah, that's what's decided, because the headmaster says, you're of low intelligence, take pride in menial tasks and small achievements. I don't know. I thought it was an interesting comment on the headmaster's. I mean, it's more explicit, the headmaster's fascist views.
Yeah.
This one.
That you never really have any kind of hint of a kind of eugenicist-y mindset in the original.
Yeah, but I feel like that is definitely there in this one. As Lizzie's mum is ill, and there's a point where there's a bit where all the parents get what actually happens there. It's a kind of alternative version of the school at the end.
That's really strange. What the kind of strange, like, living thought experiment bit?
It's quite fairly bizarre, but
yeah, like, so Lizzie makes some kind of, you know, Faustian pact with the team of the headmaster, and basically, he says, "I'll cure your mother from her illness if you go along with everything that I say." Mm. And so she accepts, and then, yeah.
Then the mother is suddenly the deputy head of the school, and various other things have suddenly changed. And Lizzie is just wildly confused, and is like, well, what happened to your illness, Mum? And her mum says, illness is weak and inefficient. And Lizzie says, no, it's not. It's just something that happens. Which I thought was quite a nice just a juxtaposition of demon headmaster views and a more humane view of the human condition.
Well, yeah, and sort of, I guess, demon headmastery views rather aligning with that of our current government and the Department of Workfare and Pensions.
Yes. Yeah.
And in terms of janitors, obviously, you know, there's been a fair amount written on how much the coronavirus has brought home to everyone, how important, say, people doing waste disposal are compared I don't know, advertising executives.
Yeah. So, someone calls him a fascist and throws a milkshake at him.
That does happen, yeah.
It does happen. It was great. I really enjoyed it. Unfortunately, Blake takes the brunt of the milkshake.
Yeah, you've got to expect some kind of splatter damage, I guess. Whereas, you know, if this had been made back in the 90s, it would have been gunge.
It would have been gunge, yeah.
You know, why don't we have gunge a fascist?
I was skipping forward a bit, but I was very happy to hear the callback to the Eddie Hare show.
So who's the guy? So, and I watched this with my partner Antonio, and she was quite excited or pleased to see Eddie Hare. So who was it who played Eddie Hare?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. Is he in this?
No, but...
No.
Well, I think you see a sort of... Sure, there's this bit... It's a very confusing bit, which I really liked, where... I think you know what I'm going to say. When they go onto a computer to try to sort of investigate the Eddie Hare show and, like, the old Demon Headmaster. And it's like they go on this sort of bizarre... It looks like a kind of... I don't know if it's meant to be like preserved GeoCities site.
Uh-huh.
It's like this bizarre series of flash animations.
Yeah.
With imagery from the original series.
Yeah.
And they don't really learn anything from it at all. It's really strange.
Well, they do. They get the... they find the coordinates to the old school.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But yeah, this is the start of episode 6, where the kids literally Google spooky headmaster to try and figure out what's going on, which seems like a very realistic thing to do in this scenario.
But it's also, like, it's interesting. So they look that up, and it's got lots of people, like, on message boards saying, oh, you remember that creepy old headmaster when he was on the Eddie Hare show? And it was kind of great, because it was kind of like you'd have people discussing the Demon Headmaster nostalgically online.
Yeah,
which was neat.
Okay, it was Danny John Jules who played Eddie Hare.
Is that...
Cat. He's the cat.
Cat. From Red Dwarf.
Yes. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So episode 6 of 10, this is when we start getting these callbacks to the old series. And the kids go on this kind of bizarre GeoCities flash animation trail and find the coordinates, the map coordinates to the old school. And when they go there, they find photos of the kids on the wall in the old green school uniform, and an oil painting of Terence Hardiman's headmaster on the wall in the office.
Which I hope he now has in his home.
I really hope so. It seems like he'd be into that, judging by the antics that we... hear of him.
I don't hear any antics.
Oh, I heard anecdotes on Twitter of him playing up to Demon Headmaster to people. The phone in the headmaster's office rings, and it's Terence Hardiman's voice saying, "Look into my eyes," and the eyes on the painting move. They find a secret compartment in the office and a VHS tape in there, and then they all go, "What? Eh? What's this? I've never seen one before because I'm a child." No, they don't. But
it's like most of my students with DVDs or watching films in cinemas.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in a group.
They try to leave with this VHS tape, and then the headmaster does something sinister with a map and sort of deploys members of the public that sort of start circling in on them. And a lollipop lady says, "Conformity brings happiness and health," as they try to escape, but they're sort of penned in by these people who are filming them on phones. It sort of turns out that resistance is futile, and Angelica gives over the tape to save her friends. But they find a bit of paper inside the empty VHS case that looks blank, but under the light they can make out the words, "My name is Dinah Hunter, and if you're reading this, it's happening again." Da, da, da. Which is quite exciting.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, Dinah Hunter's the protagonist from the first Demon Headmaster.
they try to find Dinah online, but just come up with an obituary. But the next day at school, a new stern brunette teacher turns up and then rides off on a motorbike when it's found out that she's not meant to be there, sending all the headmaster's drones spinning out of the sky, which is pretty cool. It turns out that that's Dinah, and she works for MI6. There's also a tantalizing mention of Rose, who is the kind of the very sort of chilling, sadistic prefect from the original series.
And the fan favourite character.
And the fan favourite. She's brilliant. So it was very exciting to get a mention of Rose. I was excited.
I was excited too. But I'm not entirely sure with what they do with the characters.
Yeah. So how it plays out is that...
So you think that Dinah's got a brilliant plan?
because there's this kind of showdown in the old school involving a bomb. This is the first showdown involving a bomb. There's then one later on as well. But in this first showdown involving a bomb, Blake manages to disarm it and Dinah kind of gets captured by the demon headmaster. Starts, you know, parroting his phrases and being, you know, thoroughly hypnotized, at which point you think, ah, she's just pretending to be hypnotized. She's going to have a brilliant plan.
Dinah Hunter wouldn't just be another drone. would she?
Yeah.
We all get older. We all lose the heady independence of youth and go to work for MI5. So, you know, yeah. she'd already copped out to the system by this point.
I guess so. I guess they did need to leave it to the actual kids to save the day. But Dinah is. Much of a lemon for most of it.
I mean, she's quite easily easily dealt with, really. She does not. Antonio was quite disappointed by that and thought it was quite an odd thing for Gillian Cross to do. But it's notable that Dinah doesn't appear at all in the book in Total Control. So I do wonder whether this was Gillian Cross's decision and to what degree she, mm-hmm. you know, was consulted on the screenplay for the TV series or not. Because it does seem odd for, you know, Gillian Cross wrote half a dozen or so Demon Headmaster books, all with Dinah Hunter as the protagonist. It does seem quite strange to bring back your beloved protagonist, only for them to be kind of felled at the first hurdle and become a kind of fascist drone for the rest of the series until they're saved at the end.
It was a slightly odd choice.
But I don't know. We all disappoint ourselves as we get older. You know, maybe it makes sense. You know, our childhood heroes aren't what they were. You know.
The other slightly odd choice is that it turns out that. Lizzie and Tyler's mum is Rose.
We better work this out, I guess, because it is quite strange. So at some point during her childhood or during the original series, did the Demon Headmaster implant a virus? I mean, there's a lot of kind of bioengineering stuff in fourth series of Demon Headmaster. So is that it? Does he? He's clearly given her some kind of chronic illness or debilitating condition.
Yeah.
I mean, a microchip. Did he do that? Rose to come into his office and then, you know, put something in her brain.
could be. I mean, Rose. It's been so long since I've read them, but Rose definitely continues to have a role after the first book, beyond the school era. Like Rose is still there. I think he had a fairly there's a fairly long relationship with Rose.
Yeah. So I guess this is just part of his, well, the other demon headmaster's kind of control over her, and did this thing, you know, making her unwell in order that if she tried to remember her true self or break free, like, I think it's like she's kind of been put on standby, basically.
Uh-huh.
You know, so she's been kind of cooped away in this new suburban house with a kind of new identity. And then, you know, if the demon headmaster or the super being that controls all the demon headmasters needs to dispatch Rose,
uh-huh,
again, you know, she's kind of there to be dispatched and has this kind of illness so she can't fight back.
That was my
fevered attempts at trying to make sense of it, because I didn't really understand, if I'm honest.
No, me neither. I think that's a good gist of it.
So sorry, listeners, if you're just like, what is he prattling about at this point? Because honestly, I don't really know what happened near the end of the series. It got a bit confusing.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even have a suspected coronavirus, and I also found it quite confusing. So.
Thanks.
I've been going back and forth on like like arguing with myself, kind of Gollum style. I'm like, but she looks nothing like Rose. I'm like, yes, but lots of adults don't look like they did when they were 10. Yes, but she really looks nothing like her.
I'm surprised they didn't get back the original performers, actually. Mm. But, you know, probably moved on with their lives. We can't really expect people to be like Rose, sat and cool, ready to be dispatched for the new rebooted Demon Headmaster any given moment, admittedly.
I mean, I thought the adult Dino was... I believed in her being the adult Dino. The adult Rose I just found it hard to square with the child actor.
Yes, I would agree with that. But we do get one cast member back.
Yes, we do. Yes. Right at the very end. Who turns up but the original demon headmaster himself.
Although I totally thought he was going to turn out to be the Prime Minister, but maybe that would have been too strong a political statement.
So Terence Hardiman's headmaster turns up. This is when the kids have hacked the new demon headmaster's attempt to hypnotize the prime minister in the country, and so old demon headmaster turns up and says,
"The operation's failed. We need to put in the emergency exit strategy. We need to destroy the new headmaster."
Even though we spent 20 years in hibernation working on this new body, it needs to go. He sets a timer for an explosive device in the school, reveals himself to be a hologram, and kind of nonchalantly says, "Oh, I can build a new one. It's fine."
well, my holograms are actually my texture of the week.
The
texture that is not a texture, although more of a texture than Ava's so-called social textures.
Okay, shall we?
What's this? Texture. I like how you were trying to match the pitch there of your instrument. Very harmonious.
Thank you. I am in a band, you know.
Oh yeah, you are. What's your band called?
I don't have a name yet. But I'm the drummer. So yeah. A hologram texture, Adam.
Yeah, so the holograms, so in the book Total Control, the demon headmaster often doesn't even kind of deign to make a real appearance in front of kids. He just sort of dispatches this hologram instead.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, there's a description of the hologram I really liked.
Mm.
Ethan started the film playing again and saw the door opening and Lizzie walking into the room, but the headmaster wasn't there. Ethan frowned. That didn't make sense. Lizzie wouldn't have gone in without being called. So, where was the headmaster? Lizzie looked just as baffled as Ethan felt, but only for a few seconds. Then, in the middle of the room, the air began to sparkle and shiver, like a cloud of tiny silvery midges. At first, it was just a strange formless shimmering, but gradually it thickened and a tall figure began to take shape. Ethan saw Lizzie open her mouth as if she was going to speak, but she didn't say anything. She just stared as the headmaster appeared in front of her, with one hand raised to take off his dark glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like shimmery, sparkly holograms.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have two food textures. One being the chunky green smoothie that Angelica tries to sell the kids for exorbitant prices from her stall, which did look distinctly unappetizing.
I thought it looked quite nice.
Oh, okay. I mean, I've been drinking green smoothies for a long time.
Yeah, I remember when we were both in New York, you know, you'd always be serving up kale and kale alone, kale sprinkled with kale.
It's true. I was on the kale bandwagon.
But now it's become popular. You're just too cool.
It was just the chunks, Adam. It was just the chunks in the smoothie.
Chunks o' kale
that I found unappetizing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't mind a chunky smoothie.
Okay. chunky blue icing being smeared on a muffin was my other texture. And the kids are hypnotized into helping bake goods for Angelica's stall and they're sort of smearing very, very thick, very blue icing on muffins.
To be fair, you know, Ren, we are in lockdown and some degree of rationing is to be expected. So, you know, I think if I was offered, you know, a vegan chunky blue muffin or a kale smoothie at this moment in time, I wouldn't be turning it down. I mean,
I definitely didn't factor in enough sweets for lockdown.
oh no, I hear you. Seriously, like, my mum's gone out, you know, shopping once, and you know, I was like, please bring back sweets, and bless her, she brought back a packet of sweets, but I don't think she understood. I tried to look pleased and thankful, but you know, wasn't quite the quantity I was hoping for, I will admit. And the inevitable happened of her, you know, the next day me being like, oh, is there anything for dessert or pudding anywhere, Mum? And she was like, oh, why don't you have your sweets, Adam? I was like, what, those sweets you gave me yesterday? As if they would still be around. As the corona rattled your brains, Mother. No, I didn't say that. I was very polite about it.
No, I mean, I'm very, thankfully very, stocked up on, tin tomatoes and, onions and,
Well, I'd already got my Brexit stockpile, at least, but okay. It's not much of a stockpile. Like, it's about 12 cans, and I've already started in on them. It's mostly, you know, just canned fruit. Got some canned rhubarb, which I'm saving really? For a rainy day. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, you'll have to report back on that if you
I'm quite
break into it.
Quite excited by that.
I haven't started a sourdough yet.
No, that seems
gone,
to be
a, I haven't gone that far.
Seems to be a thing. I mean, I get a bit freaked out by my mum's sourdough stuff. She's got this yeast she calls Norman. And she'll be like, oh, I'm just off to feed Norman. I, gives me the fear. I do not like it. Like, oh no, oh, Norman died. Oh, don't worry, I'll get a new Norman.
Have you eaten Norman's offspring though?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I guess he's planning revenge as we speak, I imagine. Yeasty minds.
So I made a list of dystopian soundbites from the series. I'll paste them into the Zoom chat, and I thought we could take turns reading them out.
Okay, yeah, sure. You know, I could always use them as, like, little stabs between... Because I've been listening to more podcasts, obviously, and, you know, a lot of these podcasts, they have, like, little comedy stabs, don't they? Like little,
they do, yeah.
Yeah, like a proper radio show, so, you know, maybe we need some of those. Okay, do you want to start, Ren?
Okay. A disorderly appearance creates a disorderly mind.
He's inspirational. He's really turned the school around.
Disorder is the enemy of achievement.
Conformity brings health and happiness. Resistance will only bring pain.
Unacceptable levels of emotion.
Control, command, conquer.
We do not celebrate runners-up at Hazelbrook.
Have a profitable day. We can all express our true selves. The innocent student has nothing to hide.
I fulfill your deepest desire. I make the decision so you don't have to.
Well, that's nice. Oh, I feel quite calm after all of that. quite comforting. Reassuring in these times of crisis, you know. I guess these draconian measures are needed after
all. Oh, look, there's one of the government's drones outside my window now.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely imagine followers of the Demon Headmaster snitching on people for their second runs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Any final thoughts?
I mean, I think that might be all my thoughts.
What, forever?
Oh, no. It might be.
You're done.
I'm packing in the old brain machine now.
Okay, yeah, well, the only thing I've got is something I can't usefully show over the podcast, which is that my copy of the book has, like, it's got a little icon of an eye with, like, a kind of spiral. And as you flick the pages, the eye opens and closes like in a flick book.
Ooh, nice. Oh, that's good. I'm glad to see flick book technology is still around.
Yeah, the kids still love it. They still love the flick book technology.
I did have something else to say, which is that it took me, like, I was like six episodes in before I realised it was meant to be set in Glasgow.
I don't think that really twigged for me.
It was filmed in Glasgow, but there's only one character with a Glasgow accent, and like a few other characters with other Scottish accents. It's quite confusing. Yeah, I'm going to claim it, though.
Oh, cool.
For my adopted home city.
Oh. Nice. Well, shall we continue with the recent children's programming and do the second season of Creeped Out next?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's very good. So, yeah. Cool. And if you guys need something to watch during lockdown, Demon Headmaster's worth a watch, I think. Good child acting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, sorry if this has been a bit spacier than normal. Everything's a bit weird, but we're doing our best.
That should be our tagline. Everything's a bit weird, but we're doing our best.
Yeah. cool. Our theme music is by Maki Yamazaki. Our artwork's by Letty Wilson. Our outro is by Joe Kelly. I'll put those details in the show notes. And
you can find us on Twitter.
You can find us on Twitter at Still Scared Pod, or email us at stillscaredpodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, and thanks to whoever it was who may or may not be Ren Sibling. Let's assume it's not who left a very kind review for us on it's not called iTunes anymore, is it?
On Apple Podcasts. If you weren't my sibling, you're now my adopted sibling. So.
And Ren's actual sibling is no longer. So watch yourself, will I?
Do you have a sign off for us, Adam?
Yes. Just to say that I'm preparing an analysis of our cash flow situation and comparing it with the predictions of my original business plan at the beginning of the show's run. And our cash flow situation isn't so good.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. see you next time, spooky kids.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, a bit spacing, but I think we covered it.
Yeah.